Welcome to Liberty Revealed, the only show where you will learn about all things liberty. Your host for the show is a registered libertarian who's been involved in politics for more than 25 years. He has a passion for teaching others about the concept of personal liberty. Please welcome your host, Mike Mahoney.
Do you miss the glory days of talk radio where the hosts knew their stuff and were not spreading fake stories? What would it be like if those same hosts could speak their mind and not have to answer to management for it? I have just the thing for you. Spencer Hughes Podcast Adventures is the new show from Spencer Hughes, formerly of Fox News Radio and a host of other places. For as little as $1 a month, you can have access to Spencer again. His insights will make you think, and his humor will make you laugh. This is your chance to help a man build his dream and support his family. Head over to patreon.com/Spencer Hughes today and subscribe to one of the several levels you can choose from. You will not be disappointed in the content you are going to begin receiving. patreon.com/Spencer Hughes. Adventurous content, the way radio used to be.
Thanks, George. So, yeah, the homeless issue is pretty close to my heart because, I mean, pretty much any of us could be homeless, you know, just like that. And so I'd want to cover a little history of homelessness in Orange County, and I'll give you some of the facts about that, and then we'll talk about, within that history, what the politicians have done to cause the problem, or at least make the problem worse. So, at last count, and they do a point-in-time count every 2 years in Orange County where they physically go out and count the homeless. And at last count, there were 5,000-plus homeless in Orange County. Now, the interesting thing about that number, though, is if you're a couch surfer who doesn't have a house but you're staying at this friend's house for one day and that friend's house for another day, you're not considered homeless. And if you sleep in your car, you are not considered homeless. There's a lot of stories about people going, you know, you hear people say, oh, there's all these resources available for the homeless. And then they show up there and they get through all the paperwork. And then the last thing is, well, where do you stay? Well, I stay in my car. Oh, you're not homeless. You don't qualify for those benefits. So it's kind of a catch-22 if you're a homeless person. Now, it's not a new issue. The problem's not new. Since 1989, there have been 3 grand jury reports in Orange County about homelessness. And every single one of them says pretty much the same thing. They make recommendations for the homeless issue. Of those 3, only twice did the county respond. But both times, their response was sort of like, hey, we're doing the best we can. But the most recent one was in 2005. And one of the things they said in there is, clearly homelessness is not a priority to the Board of Supervisors because in your budget, you only have $145,000 allocated, and it's for an executive salary. And the response from the CEO of Orange County was like, but we have $145,000 in our budget. Why? How can you say it's not a priority to the board? Well, 2 years later, in 2012, they came up with the 10-year plan to solve homelessness in Orange County. And like any of you who've ever worked at a business where you have to meet goals, they set these goals, but the goals were for them, and so they didn't actually police themselves or hold themselves accountable for those goals. So, in 2018, they canceled the plan, the 10-year plan to end homelessness, because they had gone in reverse. There were more homeless on the streets than before. The estimate is that if you include the people in their cars, it's going to blow your mind. If you include the people in their cars and the people who couch surf, there's about 35,000 homeless in Orange County, and only 3,000 beds for the homeless. So, Santa Ana Riverbed. Everybody's heard about the Santa Ana Riverbed, and we've seen the stories. Tori and I have been down there numerous times, and somebody, because it was an election year, decided time to clean that out. I mean, they spent 10 years ignoring the growth of those camps down there, mostly because I think they didn't know what to do. And the reality is, I think from the politician's standpoint, leaving them where they were until they had a plan was probably the better choice. Because now they have problems with they're in neighborhoods that they weren't in before, and so people are complaining about that. And there's a lot of people who I've seen being very vocal about get them out of the riverbed. Now they wish they were back because they're patrolling their neighborhoods. Now, you know, as a libertarian, public money for social issues is a sore spot for me. But then I start to think about it more pragmatically, and it's like, okay, there's $900 million that's been of tax dollars that's been earmarked strictly for mental health and homelessness. And it's earning interest $30 million a year. So it's been sitting there for 3 years. So it's about $1 billion that's sitting there. So the pragmatist in me says, are they ever going to give me back that money? No, they'll probably, if they don't spend it on this, they'll probably waste it on some stupid program to bolster some other program that failed, like we spoke about earlier. So some advocates got word that this money was sitting there not being spent for anything. And so they filed a lawsuit on behalf of some homeless people because 32 cities in Orange County have anti-camping ordinances, which means it's essentially illegal to be homeless because where do you sleep if you don't have a home? You got to sleep outside. That's camping. It's illegal. So the police attempt to enforce those laws. This judge steps in and says, well, hold on a second. You don't have enough resources for these people. So if you don't have enough resources for these people, you can't enforce those laws. That's just not going to happen. These are human beings, and they need to be taken care of some way, somehow. And you've got all this money sitting there, and you're not doing anything with it. Maybe we should audit you. Maybe we should... And then he even pointed out that they were politicians were picking up the homeless from Newport Beach and moving them to Santa Ana and dumping them off. And so he stood in front of a crowd of, he invited every city to this meeting, and he stood in front of a crowd of people at the Santa Ana City Council chambers, and he said, I have proof that you're dumping human beings. It's against the law. If you keep it up, we will have a federal indictment come after you. We will. And he had a U.S. attorney taking notes in the gallery, and he basically told him, if you want to argue with me that's not happening, I'll put you under oath right now. You can come up here and you testify, but I'm going to tell you. And he looks at the sheriff and he says, we have video evidence, right? And the sheriff's like, thumbs up, we have video evidence, we know who's doing it. And so the judge said, look, here's the deal, going forward from today, no more dumping. We're going to forget about what happened in the past. So that's one way that the politicians have created the homeless issues, that they're taking them from wherever they don't want them and they're moving them some other place, and they're making it that city's problem. And you've seen you work at the Civic Center sometimes, George, and I mean, you've seen the crowd of people that used to be there, pretty awful. So how do the politicians create this problem? Well, first thing I think is that the Board of Supervisors is extremely afraid to make tough decisions. You know, they decided they were going to use their county-owned land in Irvine to move the homeless there for a while until they figured out what to do with them. Irvine sends busloads of people to the Board of Supervisors meeting. The next day, they change their mind. They're not willing to investigate, do their research, and then make a tough decision. At the recent Board of Supervisors Candidates Forum, we were asked a question, you know, and the question was, first, the premise is you've done your research and you've covered every angle and you've decided to vote yes on this issue, and 1,000 people show up and those 1,000 people are screaming at you to vote no. Well, most everybody kind of equivocated a little bit and, you know, hemmed and hawed around it. And I just said, look, if I've done, you told me the premise is I did my research and I'm voting yes. Unless somebody in that 1,000 tells me something I hadn't already thought of, I'm not changing my vote. I might at the worst, I'm going to table the vote to another time so I can examine it more. To me, that's decision making. You know, you do your research, and then you make your decision that you came upon. I mean, if you're not confident in your decision, why are you making a decision in the first place? So what else does the Board of Supervisors do? Well, after multiple times trying to find a place to put the homeless, they've now pushed the decision to the cities and the judge. They basically said, hey, you guys figure it out. We don't want to have anything to do with it. And plausible deniability, right? If if Newport Beach decided, all right, we're going to put some homeless out on the beach in tents, and their people got, and the citizens got upset, the board could say, wasn't us. It was your city. Wasn't us. So, and having the judge do it, he's one of the things I will say about this judge, he's very forward thinking. So he says, hey guys, I can make a ruling right now. Like it or not, I could say, this is how it's going to be. But if I do that, it's set in time. It's like writing it in concrete. And the only way that that ruling gets overturned is if another court says, no, no, I'm not going to do that. But if you guys work together as a community and decide together, well, then you can be agile and work through the issues. But if I say to you, it has to be this way, I don't care what issues you face. You have to take care of the issue. So what can we do about it? Well, as I've studied this issue over the past couple of years, and as I mentioned before, you know, there's all this money sitting there that's eventually going to just go to some stupid program somewhere. So I think as a start, we have to deal with the key issue, which is that, you know, law enforcement can't enforce the laws because there's no resources. So somehow we have to provide the resources so that law enforcement can go back to enforcing the laws. I really have absolutely nothing against them saying people can't sleep outside, you know, on the, in front of the Albertsons or Stater Brothers. I have nothing, no problem with that. If it's scaring that business's clientele away, that's hurting that business. That shouldn't be allowed. So because the courts have demanded that there has to be resources available or they won't allow the enforcement of the law, kind of ties the hands of law enforcement. So then you end up in this situation where the population as a whole is screaming and yelling about, why aren't you doing something about it? You're the police. I mean, they even get as nitpicky as, hey, a shopping cart, they stole it. It's illegal. Go arrest them. You know, like that's how petty they get about it. So I came up with a 5-point plan to basically eradicate homelessness. And parts of the plan have been used before in places around the world, and they're very successful. It all involves, though, bringing private organizations in to pick up the burden and, you know, allow the government to use that money. But see, the thing is, $1 billion sounds like a lot of money, right? Eventually, it's going to be gone. I'm not going to get more, at least not as much. So whatever you do, you have to plan big and get it settled once and for all. So first thing is offer up some sort of temporary shelters. They need some place to go and sleep. If there's 5,500 homeless and there's 5,500 beds, well, now we can enforce the laws because there's places for them to go. Then while they're there, we get them paperwork ready and we connect them to private services, drug rehab, alcohol rehab. You know, if you have mental health issues, you know, go for it. Right now, the mental health department in Orange County is in charge of all this and they're overwhelmed. They cannot handle it. They do a very good job. In fact, at the riverbed, they're a big reason why there wasn't a big violent outbreak, because they went for days ahead of time talking to people, hey, this is the last day on this date. We're going to be coming through here and you got to leave. And they kept coming back and coming back and coming back, connecting people to services. But even those people were telling us, we've never had somebody come here and offer us any services. They just don't do it. So once you get them connected to services and you get them paperwork ready, that's a big one, because think about it. If you're homeless and you don't have an ID, you can't rent a motel room. You need ID. You know, so you could have someone give you $500, but without ID, doesn't do you any good. So then the next thing, this is where the controversial part comes in, because a lot of people don't like this idea, but I think it would really work, and I've seen it work in other places in the world. Permanent assistive housing. But come as you are, permanent assistive housing. So if you're an addict, you can still come to the permanent assistive housing, get you off the street, and give you an opportunity to clean up. The history has shown, like they did it in New York City, they did it in Utah, they did it in Medicine Hat, Alberta, Canada. And the history shows that those people, for whatever reason, there's a mental change, and it must have something to do with not having to sleep on the street all the time. They want to clean up, and they want to do better, and they want to go get a job. And I think that's really the key. You know, any solution to homelessness has to involve connecting them to work. And I think that's one of the things that the government is failing. What I would do if elected is go and work with businesses and say, all right, if we put these people through this, 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 and this, and we certify that they're ready for a job, are you willing to hire them? And if you get yeses out of that, I mean, there's a program called Jobs for Life, and it's a really teeny tiny program right now run by OC United out of Fullerton. And what they do is they teach people at homeless shelters how to get a job. They teach them, you know, how to shake hands and, you know, introduce themselves and how to create a resume that will get them a job. They don't teach them job skills. They just teach them the right approach to getting the job, how to get through the interview. But it's a step in the right direction. And like, they're very strict about their rules too. If you miss two sessions, it's two sessions a week for 8 weeks. So there's 16 sessions. If you miss two, you're out. So the first time they started with 24, they graduated 12. But all 12 of those people, off the streets. They didn't go back. Got jobs and they're working. It's huge. And that to me is where the permanent assistive housing comes in, because one of the problems with getting a job is you got to have an address. People have this picky thing about wanting to know where you live if you're going to work for them. Then you're still going to have a group of people that they like being out on the street. That's what they like doing. They live that crazy lifestyle off the grid. I met a few people who've been out on the streets for 25 years and they like it that way. Well, there's still the issue of police are going to enforce the law because now there's resources. So for those people, there's a program that's a nonprofit called Alfresco Gardens. And it's essentially a mobile home park for the homeless without mobile homes. What they do is they use these big cement tubes and they're sealed off. There's got a window in the back and a door in the front, and they've got a flat floor. It gets people out of the elements. And the funny thing is, the only opposition to that are the people who say, that's not humane. You're still leaving them out in the elements. It's like, what's wrong with you? You know, you'd rather them sleep up against a building somewhere than let them go. And they're going to charge them $150 a month per unit. There's a security guard who fingerprints, scans you to get in. The police have access. So it's just like a gated community. Police can come and go whenever they want. There's bathrooms. There's bathrooms, showers, storage units that they can pay a little bit extra for, but at least they have a place to put their stuff when they're going to work. That's another big problem they have. You know, if you got your stuff in a shopping cart, where do you put it when you go to work? And after that, once you hit that, now law enforcement can enforce the law. They can do what's necessary. And the problem, though, is once again, we're talking about how politicians have caused this issue. Nothing that's presented to them is good enough. You know, there's always an excuse. That's cruel. You're leaving them out in the elements. No, it's a hell of a lot better than sleeping up against a wall while it's raining. You know, they're covered. It might not be as warm as a house, but it's a heck. I mean, even let's face it, if it's windy, you're in an enclosed area, it's going to be a lot warmer than if you're outside. So that will help. I also believe, because of all the inaction, the police haven't been able to enforce the laws. The citizens get upset. You run into, my gosh, never mind on Facebook, just in person, I've heard people say, my solution is give them as much drugs as they can take so that they all die of an overdose. Another person said, put them all into a storage container, throw it in the ocean. I mean, these are brutal things that people are saying, but we all shake our heads, but it tells you how frustrated the communities are with the homeless, because they feel like nobody's doing anything. But they don't take it back to realize why nobody's doing anything. And it all starts with making decisions to do something about it. So, you know, law enforcement can enforce the laws, but the biggest thing that has to happen is there has to be a collaborative effort between all 34 cities in Orange County. They have to come together and they have to agree on what the rules are around homelessness. If there's going to be anti-camping ordinances, it needs to be in all 34 cities and they need to be enforced the same way. Because, you know, where Victoria comes from, there's a city, and then there's an hour drive, and then there's another city, and then there's an hour drive. You know, it's very rural compared to here. But here, you know, you've got Buena Park, Anaheim, Stanton, they're all stacked on one on top of one another. And when I go out with law enforcement, what they've all told me, every department, well, we have a problem in this area because three cities meet, and we don't know what that city's regulations are. And if we arrest that person, we get chastised because, hey, they weren't violating that city's law. So that's another big problem, is there has to be consistency among the laws for those type of things. Like, You know, we've been talking about the legalized marijuana, and a lot of cities are putting the kibosh on, you know, having dispensaries and whatever. That's their right to do that. I see nothing wrong with that. They can do whatever they want. Personally, I think they should just open it up and forget about it, but that's their right if they want to do that. But I think when you're dealing with human beings and where their well-being is, everybody has to have a cohesive plan. It needs to be a county-wide plan, not a Irvine plan, a San Clemente plan, a Cypress plan, a La Palma plan. It needs to be a cohesive county-wide plan. Once you have that, now law enforcement's free to, they know what the rules are, and they're free to deal with it. Now that brings me to the final point about how to deal with homelessness, and that is the affordable housing issue that we have in Orange County. You know, we've all been talking about how expensive it is to live here, and a lot of people say, oh, just send the homeless somewhere else. Well, you can't do that because they don't have the money to go somewhere else. And sending them somewhere else is just doing exactly the whole dumping thing. It's just a little more organized. It's an issue, but come to find out that I was at a meeting last night, and a woman was sitting with us, and she told us, she's a planner, and she said that in California, there is enough land already zoned for affordable housing that you could fix the problem. And she says what they do, what builders do, you know, you have this apartment unit that has 50 units in it, and it's beautiful on the outside. They just build another one exactly like it, but they put 100 units in it. So they're smaller, but they're also cheaper because they still only need to, total rent comes out to the same, but now it's divided by 100 instead of divided by 50. And one thought that I've had, and I haven't fully thought this through yet, so don't hold me to this, but I think one way to leverage this is right now, you know, I don't know if you know this, but if you're a developer and you go into a city and you buy up a property and you put houses in there, for every house you build, you owe so much money to the city for park space. That's one of the things that California did to make sure that, and a lot of places do it, to make sure that there's open space. Well, how about you tack on to that? Well, you can either donate money to this organization over here who's going to build these affordable houses, or you build the affordable houses. Your choice. And you put the onus on the developer who's making money on the deal in the first place to do that. Now, there's a lot of red flags that go off for me on that idea. A lot of red flags. But I think if you thought through that, you could probably come up with a workable solution that wouldn't require putting someone's arm behind their back and forcing them to do something. It's sort of like a launch pad for the idea. Just like for my five-step solution to homelessness, it all started at the fifth step. How can law enforcement enforce a law so that because I believe once they start enforcing the laws, the community will be like up here, then they'll kind of settle down and you can focus on helping these people. It's unfortunately, I think our entire tax system is a big part of the problem because I don't really like spending my tax dollars on issues that the government chooses to put it to, but that also means that I don't have that money to give to a homeless organization to fix it. And that's what I would like to do. I'd like to be able to donate my money and then have them take care of it, put the onus on the private charitable organization and not on the government. Because as we all know, anything the government does, they never do it right. So, you know, even getting a plan like this to pass, you're going to get people who are going to say, well, where are those homeless shelters going to go? I don't want it in my city. It's a huge problem. That NIMBY stuff, the not in my backyard stuff, they fight tooth and nail to keep homeless people out of their area. And like, I don't know if you guys have ever been to the Bridges shelter down there in Anaheim/Fullerton area, but they require a referral to get in there from the police department or the county. And they do not allow people to hang out outside. They have security that makes them move on. And basically, if I were to take you there right now, you'd be like, where's the homeless shelter? I don't know where the... It's not like Skid Row where there's people everywhere. And I think that if people realized that it could be done like that, I think they would change their tune and they would donate money to get this taken care of. And that, to me, is the ultimate solution. Is, you know, maybe start out with the government helping and then slowly pull back and bring in more and more organizations that can fix it. Right now, the United Way has declared war on homelessness. And here's an interesting fact that I forgot to mention. Right now, the top 10% of the homeless people, as far as utilization of services, are costing us taxpayers $65,000 per person per year. Now, that includes emergency services, emergency room services, hospitalizations. Somebody has to pay for it. So it's costing us taxpayers that money. If you take that same 10%, I know everyone else is about $10,000 per person per year. If you take that top 10% and you drop it down to, you put them in homes, like permanent assistive housing, the cost drops to $10,000 per person per year for everybody, including the cost of the housing. You save the county $20 million a year and you house the people. So to me, that's a huge win because, again, as a taxpayer, I'm paying less out of my pocket for fixing a really serious social issue.
So because they're put in permanent housing situation, their cost of emergency services goes down?
Yeah, because there's more preventative care that is happening at those places. They're not in the elements, so you don't get a lot of the exposure issues that you get. If you ever seen someone who's been homeless for a really long time, usually their legs and ankles will be about this big and it looks like an elephant's skin. That's what the elements do to the human body. And these people, somehow moving them indoors, like I said, it inspires them to get work. I think they start to feel more human again. Big few myths to dispel. You know, you hear the majority of them are crazy or on drugs. Not true. It's about 25% that fit that category. That means there's 75% out there who are like all of us and they're just looking for a place to live and they can't afford to. The biggest thing that keeps those people homeless is not having the money for a down payment on an apartment. They just don't have the money. So, you know, they're trying to come up with, a lot of them have jobs and they could afford to pay rent. But the first step is, hey, you need, you know, it's $1,600 a month, and then you need $1,600 deposit. Well, they don't have $3,200.
When I went to California, I didn't have a job. To rent an apartment, I had to pay 6 months in advance.
There you go. And that, and you know, and you were probably lucky enough to be able to do that, but I bet it was a stretch too. But the point is, the politicians tend to just look the other way. They're all looking towards the next position that they're going to run for. They're not really caring so much about the legacy that they leave behind. Proof of that is you create a 10-year plan to solve a problem and 6 years in, because it's not going the way you want, you abandon it. I'd like to do that at my job. You know, I'd like to have a goal for revenue and be like, oh, I'm only hitting half of it. Forget it. We're canceling the goal. You know, she'd kill me, but... Okay, what's the question? I think it's a good idea because as I mentioned, they're very motivated to do those kinds of things when they have shelter. And so why not have them help, you know, get some of that money, recoup some of that money that we're spending? Why not? I see nothing wrong with that. And I don't know about you, but like I've had periods of unemployment and you feel like garbage. And then when you get a job, you're like, yes, you're so motivated. And I feel like, you know, a big part of the problem with homeless people that I've spoken to is they feel really down. I mean, I've asked probably 50 homeless people, what can I do for you? And most of them have responded with one common thing. Please tell people we're not animals. We're humans just like you. And that's sad. That hurts my feelings to hear that because it tells you how poorly they're treated by other people in society. I can remember being, you know, going to downtown LA for work, and I would take the train down there and the train back. And every time coming back, there was a lady that would sit like right in front of me, and the smell was horrible. But she's a human being, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, be like, ugh, go away, you know. But yeah, I think having them do some work, especially on jobs that were, you know, like you say, picking up rubbish and things like that, I mean, that's something we don't have to pay for.
Some of those people could actually find
job. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, yes. Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of these zoning laws are creating the issue. And then, like in Cyprus, they have this Measure A, and everyone's fighting against putting in more houses because it's going to be crowded. But yet they don't realize that if they don't change the zoning, they could put in a Kaiser Hospital there. I think a Kaiser Hospital will bring a lot more traffic than maybe 1,000 homes would. And also, a Kaiser Hospital isn't going to bring them a ton of tax dollars, whereas 1,000 homes is going to bring them a lot of property tax money. It's just, you know, it's a start anyway. Any other questions from over there?
I go walking on the beach.
Okay.
I drive down Magnolia Boulevard and I park there on the right hand side. It used to be hard to find a spot there because there were homeless people parked there.
Okay.
Now,
that were living in their car? Yeah, they end up moving around me. We have a lady near our home that has lived in her car probably the entire time I've lived there, and it's been 3 years. And all she does, so she doesn't annoy neighbors, is she pulls around the corner and then she goes down a little further. Then after she's been there for a few weeks, she comes back over here. And the police just leave her alone because they know that she's just down on her luck and she's homeless. And she has a job. She goes to work every day. And the one time that I was walking my dog and I said hello to her and I was talking to her for about 5 minutes, and she told me, "Can't afford a deposit on an apartment. That's the problem. I can't save enough money." And it's, you know, she's making minimum wage, and even the minimum wage isn't enough for her to do that. But you're right. I mean, you could pick up a second or a third job if you could, if people would pay you, you know, $5 an hour maybe, and you could stock up on the money. You know, any other questions? It's a combination of both. It's a combination of both. The charitable organization ones seem to be more effective. They cost less. I mean, they built bridges and they put in 200 beds. And it was $2 million that it cost them to do that. And really, all it is a giant industrial building with a huge parking lot that they fenced off, and they fit 200 bunk beds, you know, 100 bunk beds with two beds into the facility. It's not fancy. I don't know what they spent $2 million on, but $2 million to do that. Whereas, you know, the nonprofits, they're volunteer-driven. So any money that they get, they throw it right at those people to help them find jobs. You know what? You need to pay $25 to get your driver's license. Here. Here's $25 to pay for your driver's license. They take care of that stuff, and the government doesn't do that. There's less, from what I've heard, this is just, you know, hearsay. I've never actually witnessed it, but people have told me that the government-run facilities don't have very good security, so women are afraid to go there, because they get, you know, raped and molested while they're there. Whereas the private facilities are usually run, again, by volunteers, and the organizations check those volunteers out pretty carefully because they don't want liability, and runs much smoother. Churches, I know a guy, his name is Mark from Buena Park, and he was living near on Valley View and Lincoln. He was living at the Walgreens, the old Walgreens that was there. And they no trespassed that whole parking lot, so all the homeless had to leave. And I was a little worried about him, but he found a spot at a church, and he can come and go there as he pleases. There's a curfew, you know, you have to be back by a certain time. And I think that's mostly the logistics of, they don't want to keep opening and closing the door, you know, for people. And he likes it. He also looks a lot healthier. He has a few mental issues that he's got going on that he needs to have handled. But I mean, if you think about it, that's a huge problem. Like, you can't force a person to go get mental health services, and you can't force someone to rehab. They have to want that. And But that, yet that's what society wants. They want us to like herd them up and send them to a, you know, rehab facility. Any other questions from the peanut gallery over there? No? I'm glad people are watching. Hi, everybody. The internet's an interesting thing. Any other questions from the room here?
So what's the key? You were saying like the money that's allocated to the government and everything. What's to keep that from turning into like a Section 8 housing where it just ends up being corruption and just run down? And
it's not actually... The fact, the only thing keeping it from that is that it's not earmarked for that. They're not allowed to use it for that. So, but
if that money goes to setting up housing like this, what's to keep it from just turning into something where
the
it's corrupted and someone's making profit and the housing?
Yeah, it would have to be. That's why I believe you would have to have that run by private organizations and not the government, because otherwise someone's going to be like, here's so much for you, and then here's so much for this guy. And I agree with you, there'd be rampant corruption. And I say that based off of past experience. You know, you but see what they do.
If there's a large sum of money and then it goes to, you're saying, to more of like a private organization, then it's just going to turn into corruption.
They need to build... Sure. They need to build the assistive housing with that money and then let private organizations run it so it'd be run more efficiently. And not pay them to run it, but have them, from the base of their donations that they get, run it. Yeah.
So it can't be that money funding the organization.
Right. I wouldn't want that at all. Because I agree with you. Somewhere, somehow, someone's going to figure out how to rip you off. Sad state of affairs, right? So, all right. Well, if there's no other questions, that's all I've got for you tonight.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
I am a big believer in personal liberty. To me, my rights end where your rights begin. What this means is laws should ensure that your freedom to live your life as you choose does not impact everyone else's freedom to live their lives as they choose. This is personal liberty. If you want to learn more about personal liberty and get more from this show, sign up to receive my 10-page guide on personal liberty entitled Liberty Revealed. You need to fill out a simple form located at yogispodcastnetwork.com/liberty-revealed. That's yogispodcastnetwork.com/liberty-revealed. Once you read through that ebook, you are guaranteed to be in a position to apply the philosophy of personal liberty.
Thanks for listening to Liberty Revealed, the show where you learn about all things liberty. Please visit the show's website at yogispodcastnetwork.com/LR, where you can reach out to Mike directly with your questions and comments. Again, that is yogispodcastnetwork.com/LR.